This poem is called Goodbye. The first time I left for Fort Jackson, Mark's girlfriend was crying so hard you'd think it was him going instead of me. And I remember you were pissed that she was there since we left the kids at home, so I could just leave fast, break clean, hopefully be on the plane before reality set in. But instead, she cried like a baby, or the manic depressive she was, while I shifted uncomfortably from foot to foot, not sure what to say to you, and less sure what you should say to me. Goodbye seemed too thin, but now I wish I would have said it, considering how much of me never made it home. I bounce around a lot. I don't know if I can live up to the tonight's gonna be a fun night part of it. I'll apologize if I don't. It's called Hazel. The child suffered for hours alone in our isolation room before he died, and all I remember is the exact color of the towel I wrapped its body in. I think somebody cried. I'm not sure if it was me. It's called Leaving Fort Jackson. I was sitting in a South Carolina airport with a commander whose mother lived in Erie, PA, same as me. We were waiting on a plane home for 9 days before we left for Afghanistan. She was telling me how the new CO was telling her that none of her sailors was going to be allowed to smoke cigarettes. We're nurses and doctors and corpsmen, after all. The commander laughed and said Captain's never been outside of Bethesda, Maryland before, so she'll forget all about it as soon as she's up to her tits in blood. It's called Night Terror Number One. To the boy who picked up the IED that blew your arm off, and the Irish soldier who lost his foot, and for the 15-year-old who was blown open and sewn shut and left with a colostomy bag, I have not found your body parts yet, but I will keep looking for them year after year in my dreams. Yeah, people never know if they should clap at the end of those. I don't know if I'd suggest it either. It's called Closure. Wish I could sew it closed, wrap it up in white gauze, stretch skin to graft a cover over the hole in that Marine's stomach, in that soldier's chest, in that child's skull, in that twisted nightmare I keep looking through and see a war that never seems to end. If you're a Navy corpsman and you work in a hospital, they take your gun away from you every single day. Just so you know, they don't want them in the hospitals. For all of you guys that serve downrange, you know how weird that feels to have somebody take it from you. So this is just called weapons. When you entered the hospital, you had to turn in all your weapons, your 9mm, your rifle, your aversion to blood, your distaste for suffering, your squeamish stomach, your faith in mankind, your love of children, your confidence in yourself, your peaceful dreams, your tolerance to loud noises, your good sense to run, and your hopes for the future. And in the end, they only give you back your gun. So I hadn't written a poem in about 15 years. So this was the very first thing I wrote when I decided that I needed to find a way to process it. It's just called I Remember the War Too Loudly. Sometimes I have to find a space. It can be small or large, dark or filled with light, depending on when I last took my medication. Once inside, I lick my fingers and stick them in my ears, and for a few precious seconds, the sound of the helicopters is muffled enough for me to hear my own screams. It's called Kisses Like a Stranger. The war is still inside my head, in my closet, in my lunchbox, my washing machine. It kisses me like a stranger on a train to hell. It walks me like a dog with a shock collar. It fools my ears, but not my eyes, because I can see that no one is actually dying in my living room, my kitchen, my nightmares or memories. It's just that I can still hear them scream. It's just called Tattoo. Everyone asks me if I plan to get a tattoo as a remembrance of the war. No, I say, but I will tattoo anything you like if it will help me forget the war. But what about the names of the soldiers you worked on who died, they ask. There is not enough room in my body. Besides, I have never learned their names, only or their faces, only where we sent their bodies to. excuse me. I got lots to pick from. I mostly knew what I wanted to do. There we go. It's called Ghost on a Train. I am a ghost on a train, a drunken painter using his hat to make clouds on canvas, a memory of a war long over. I am the schizophrenic neighbor yelling at speeding cars, the unhappy wife mating scrambled eggs through hot tears, a soldier with one leg walking through nightmares, and I am what is left when death enters a room and everything else, even God, leaves. I wrote this one to my wife, and yet somehow it's not any happier. This is called a king-size bed. Tonight our bed is a life raft where you pull me ashore, sunburned and grateful. Yesterday was an airfield where ghosts offloaded casualties in my screaming nightmares. Last week our bed was a prayer rug where we meditated beside our sleeping children. Last month it was the epicenter of an earthquake made of love. Last year our bed was a coffin I tried to bury beside my father's. In 2010, it was an airport where you held me before I left for Afghanistan, and once, it was a sunny meadow where we held hands and talked about family. And you slept against my skin, your leg over mine, and I think we thought it was just a bed to lie in as we dreamed of the life we thought we'd have before life gave us all of this instead. Okay. I gotta trust someone to tell me. I write in these really long snake-like lines, so I have no idea how long these things are, so. Called hypervigilance. I thought it was enough to believe that I would go to Afghanistan to help people, not hurt them. Felt right, safe. I could separate myself from the killing, only that doesn't work, and death ends up in your bunk and your shower stall. It's on the airfield and in every room you walk in, and you taste it on your food like salt, feel it on your skin like dust. You can't wash it off your hands like blood. Use soap, use bleach, use God. Use anything you can get them to send you from home, because you only thought of the ones you could save, but it's the weight of the ones who die that climb on you like 60 pounds of Kevlar, and it's their deaths that keep you scanning every room for trouble, keeps your back against the wall, and it's their voices that will tell you when it's time to run. This is just an attempt to answer a question I get asked a lot. It's just called, What Do I Want? A simple question, really. But after these last 4 years, a dead father and a too long war, I don't trust my instincts, and banking on myself feels like betting on a strange horse just because you like the name. So what do I want? I want dreams of my kids without missing arms. I want a day where nothing happening feels expected or normal, and maybe sand under my feet will only make me want to swim. I want to lose my memories of this war like old dog tags or spare change. I want the ghosts of the dead soldiers to carry the ghost of the wounded far enough away so I can't hear them scream. Two more? All right. It's called A Kind Person. In Kuwait, 2 weeks from home, I hear the word compassion fatigue for the first time in my life. After all you have seen, you may just be too tired to care about people for a while. We are advised to sleep a lot and watch movies, decompress before we head home, and remember, you may not be able to be a kind person for a while. 5 years later, and I am still not a kind person. Not any kind of person. Two more? Okay. This is called Gestalt, a word I learned from my friend in the poem, so. My friend Anita told me that after losing both parents in a horrible car wreck, she struggled with even going outdoors. She was hypervigilant with her two young children and felt like her life was falling in on itself. She'd been a psych major and spent time at the Gestalt Institute. These ideas helped her get past her pain, so she suggested I imagine a white room where I go to hold and comfort my most beloved, my wife, kids, and my dead father. Then I comfort the people I only knew a short time, soldiers, Afghan children, or even strangers. Then I hold and comfort my enemies, the boy who beat me up on the playground, girls who stole my heart and fucked my friends. Then I am supposed to imagine offering comfort to the one who hurt me the most, only I cannot imagine who that is. Me in 2010 before the war, or me in 2015, still unable to let it go. All right, I'm gonna finish with this one. This is called Who Am I? What good is there in bleeding all over everyone with these stories of amputated women and broken soldiers? Who am I to spread these nightmares outside of my own head? I already wake my children with my screams at night and scare my wife with my silence and frustrate my psychiatrist by refusing pills. So who am I to speak about things a man should want to forget? I am another broken American promise, poor working class middle-aged man who fell for a Roy Rogers, John Wayne line in the sands of Iwo Jima smokescreen, who packed the wounds and cleaned the dead, who pulled the staples from human stumps and swept bone fragments into small piles. I'm the guy who had to hold it together until I could lose it all in night terrors and dead baby dreams, who still looks for survivors in crowded bars and restaurants. I am the proverbial poor boy who fought a rich man's war, and I am what's left after you raise what's left of the flag. Thanks, y'all.